This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Hey.
Hello and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. I'm a writer, actor, and comedian. And we have a returning guest today, Kevin T. Porter.
Oh my gosh.
From Good Christian Fun and Gilmore Guys. And that was on a little list and a little print publication, wasn't it?
It was on a little list and a little print publication, yes.
What was that list? Was it 100 Best Podcasts of the Century?
It was, I think the technical title was Top 100 Podcasts of All Time. I think.
yeah.
I'm saying it like a joke, but I think that's what.
No.
It's like a meaningless moniker.
Yeah.
But it was so fun. It was very nice and everything, especially like seeing other people that are like colleagues or friends of mine also on the list and started podcasts around that same time, like 2014, 2017 era. But then it's also very funny to be like, good hang with Amy Poehler, one of the best 100 podcasts of all time. I was like, ooh, I think she's done 4 episodes.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we have enough sample data to be able to say whether or not.
No.
New Heights with Travis and Jason Kelsey, one of the top 100 podcasts of all time. Do we know enough to know if that's true? I don't know.
And podcasts are still a little new. Ancient Roman podcasts, of course.
The medium is still new.
Yeah.
Although I started listening to podcasts back in, I want to say 2005 or 2006.
Wow. And what kind of podcasts?
Well, yeah. I was listening to them on my iPod, and it was offshoots of radio. So mm-hmm. It was This American Life by Myra Glass. And it was also like Film Spotting, this film podcast out of WBEZ Chicago. But that was essentially what the form was. And I remember riding around on my bike in suburban Texas listening to This American Life. And to me, Wow. That's what a podcast was. Named after, there's no other medium that's named after a device that is no longer in use. Podcasting is named after the iPod. No one uses iPods anymore unless it's like some sort of retrofit situation. It would be like still calling music. I was listening to my 8-tracks the other day.
Yeah. I was listening to my gramophone. Yeah.
I listened to the new gramophone of Sabrina Carpenter. They're like, oh, that's kind of interesting to think about in that way.
But I can actually get a pretty clunky transition here. Please. The iPod first came out in 2001, the
what
same
else came
year.
Out in 2001, Erin?
As today's book by Owen Colfer, Artemis Fowl.
Okay, and you did look up how to pronounce that.
No, actually, but I knew, not personally, I knew of an actor whose first name was spelled the same way, E-O-I-N, and that was pronounced Owen, but I did not check, because I did a bad job, on this person's name. But this is one of the best-selling series of all time.
Of all time?
Of all.
Ranks in between what and what?
It's up there with Harry Potter. This is definitely, you know, 4 or 5 years after Harry Potter, really riding the coattails.
And of similar quality. But does Colfer have similar views to Miss Rowling and how she's evolved over time?
I did not look into any social media, but he know that he used to be like a primary school teacher. Okay. And he loves theater. He has always loved theater. And this year, 2025, they have started working on an Artemis Fowl musical in London.
Okay, so that's the medium that maybe it's destined to go to.
Yeah.
There's an ill misbegotten film adaptation that is like kind of a forgotten calamity.
Yes.
In a way.
Released in 2020, directed by Kenneth Branagh. And in 2023, they pulled it from Disney Plus.
They pulled it from Disney Plus. I believe you can rent it on like PVOD if you want to, but I'll check it out. And I watched the trailer for it and I was like, I was getting bored through the 2 minute trailer.
Well, and I know people criticized it because they made Artemis the protagonist instead of the antagonist. And that's sort of where I wanted to start because this book, Cutting to the Chase, not required reading for me personally. And part of it was I was interested in this character of Artemis Fowl, and then he is barely in this book. This is really about a little fairy police officer named Holly.
Holly Hunter.
is it
Hunter? Well, I was imagining the whole time. I mean, her name's Holly Short. I'm like, yeah, yes. Holly Hunter, Short.
Yep.
She is. Correct. True.
But apparently Colfer pitched this, or the book was pitched, as Die Hard meets fairies.
Which, yes, in this first book, was it the intention that this would be a series?
I'm not certain, but it is an 11-book series, and there are some graphic novels mixed in. But the first like chapter, I was in. I was engaged. You have a 12-year-old Artemis Fowl, described in the dust jacket, a genius, a criminal mastermind, a millionaire, and he is only 12 years old. And he's an interesting character at the beginning. They're like jet setting in Ho Chi Minh and Cairo, and they're doing dirty deeds for sacred texts. And then it becomes very quickly, he leaves and it's Die Hard with fairies. Very quickly.
Wow. I mean, you know, this opens up an interesting exploration generally of what we want from like child protagonists. Mm-hmm. So in doing required reading, Aaron, what have you found to be like the common archetypes of like centering the story around a young boy or a young girl? Yeah. What are the sort of types that pop up over and over again on this podcast?
I think it's usually some kind of outcast, someone who feels a bit out of place. Usually the character is geared towards the age in which the reader is meant to be. And then, they've got some kind of problem. The one I'm thinking about right now is Harriet the Spy, who is so prickly. That was a book that I really ended up enjoying. But I think like your co-host from Good Christian Fun, Caroline, was on. And that character is, you know, a little orphan girl who we talked about is perfect. She has no flaws except for the fact that she is poor. And sometimes that works. Sometimes.
What was the character in Caroline's episode?
It was a little princess. So it is a little girl who's very wealthy, and then her father dies, and her schoolmaster suddenly makes her basically a child slave. Cheery.
Is this the Alfonso Cuarón adaptation?
Yes. Yes. I've been told they're quite different, but yes. And I liked this idea that he didn't seem all that bad to Artemis, which, by the way, famously a woman's name.
Artemis is. I didn't realize.
Yeah, a Greek goddess of maybe virginity and hunting.
Which is not exactly what you want to conjure for a child protagonist's name. I was asking about the archetype thing.
Yes.
Because the idea of the title character and the child of the book being not the protagonist is interesting to me.
Yeah.
There's something incredibly grating to me about the notion of I think Artemis Fowl, because the whole thing with him, and just like a recap for listeners.
Yes.
He is a criminal mastermind. He's globetrotting. He's always 5 steps ahead of everybody else. Wise beyond his years, knows all the ancient languages, can translate things. He has like little plans and hatches little schemes and everything. He has a manservant who it specified is black. Is that true? It's not specified in the film.
In the film, he is black. And people said, that's messed up, man. Especially because the narrative is that the Fowl family, and I guess it's literally the Butler family, have been like 4 generations. The Butlers have been raised to be servants for the Fowls, who are Irish, and Owen Colfer is Irish.
The idea of imbuing a child character with like wise beyond their years qualities, and especially like, oh, it looks like you stepped right into my trap. It just evokes young Sheldon Core to me. Everything that is. So from the jump, this notion of like, I'm not like, I wish I could root for him, I wish it was less complicated or anything like that. It's more just this idea of, I am not bemused in the way that maybe Colfer is banking on.
Yeah.
In writing this kind of character, I'm already starting off on the wrong foot of like, I'm not like, yeah, you hate to love him, but you kind of do against your better judgment. There's none of that tension for me. And I'm like, I want this kid to be like humbled to his knees by whatever, like a wizard or whoever's going to come after him. And so the kind of like tension of like, oh, if you were a little kid reading this, and that's your kind of like, that's your audience surrogate or like your entry into like empathy for the story. I think even then, putting myself in those shoes, I would not be compelled in the way that I think maybe I was supposed to be. That said, I'm wrong. This is one of the best-selling book series of all time.
Well, I'm going to backtrack a tiny bit and then loop back around. I posted on my Instagram, I have a bunch of physical books for this podcast that I'm trying to get out of my apartment. And so I did some polls on Instagram, and this was the one that people wanted. So I reached out. We had talked about you coming back.
So this was by popular demand that you do this book, not have me back.
No, by popular demand, but also, yes, by popular demand. You have fans. Your fans showed up.
Release the exclusive cut. Uncensored.
So reading it, I was like, I don't get it. And then I was talking to a coworker this morning, and I said, you know, well, when I reached out to you with this one, you said, oh, this is the one that turned into a movie where Josh Gad farts a lot, which in the book is not only farts, but also shits. That's a big part of it. He farts and he shits a little goblin? Dwarf.
The dwarf, yes. Mulch dwarf. Duggins, I believe, is his name.
Mulch Duggins.
Digging Doug through every little thing.
And I think that was the thing this morning that I was like, oh, actually, that is the part that maybe makes sense for why that you get like 10-year-old boys reading this. I mean, 10-year-old, would you have enjoyed the fart and the shit jokes in here?
No. It's been a lifelong thing of mine. You can ask my friends too.
Yeah.
I don't like this kind of thing. Like that sort of what's it called? Scatological sort of humor. From a young age, I was like, not for me. No, thank you. And it has remained consistent in my adult life. And that comes from my father and his father before him. It's a family tradition that we don't care for that sort of thing. So the idea of like, this is the source text in which Josh Gad plays the fart guy in a movie.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
I was curious about.
Yeah.
To see what like the value might have been. And there was a non-zero part of me that was like, maybe I should watch the whole movie.
Just for that.
Maybe. I mean, I was going to stream it and just skip through. Can't do that. Got to torrent it or rent it.
And you can't. I don't know that in good conscience I could give this $4 of my dollars to stream this.
Oh, certainly not. Well, and if for no other reason than Kenneth Branagh was so mean to Emma Thompson back in the 90s. You know?
And Emma Thompson is who I want to be when I grow up. I have a big poster in the next room. No, I want to be the woman who wrote Sense and Sensibility. That's a perfect film, in my opinion.
Finally watched that a couple of months ago. Hoo-hoo! Hoo, mama. Oh, what a film. What a picture.
Yeah, she won an Oscar for best screenplay. And I did not understand Jane Austen as a comedian until watching that film in college and being like, oh, yeah. Oh, she was funny then and continues to be. And like, I only ever saw it as like romances. There's a scene in Sense and Sensibility where like the younger sister, both younger sisters are crying. The mom is crying. They all slam their doors and Emma Thompson is just there holding a cup of tea and just sits down on the stairs. And it is hysterical.
And it's so funny you should say that, because I feel like I did not understand fully the comedy of Shakespeare until watching Much Ado About Nothing, also directed by Kenneth Branagh and also starring Emma Thompson.
Oh, that's true.
And that's a movie that I saw in a theater a couple months ago. And I'm like, oh, I like all these actors. I probably won't understand some of it because I'm doo-doo-dee-doo upstairs. But, you know, it'll be a fun time. And it played like a rock concert. Everyone was hooting and hollering throughout the whole. It was so funny. And
yeah,
really enjoyed that.
That's fantastic. I mean, my school district growing up, starting at a certain age, you had to read a Shakespeare play in English class every year. And I have a lot of thoughts and feelings about Shakespeare, but in eighth grade, our teacher was dealing with some illnesses. And so we got to the end of the year, she hadn't taught us any Shakespeare, and she's like, I'm gonna put this movie on, and I need you guys just to, if anyone asks, we did it. That was the most engrossed I've ever seen a group of eighth graders than in watching Much Ado About Nothing.
Of course.
It's so good.
That makes the most sense to me. I don't believe a group of eighth graders would probably be as engrossed watching the Artemis Fowl adaptation. That was in development hell, evidently.
Yes.
For many years. And
as soon as the book was published in 2001, mm-hmm. people were trying to get the rights. And then the film came out in 2020. And that's why I don't work
Although
in development
it shot
anymore.
Way before that. I think it.
Yeah. I don't even know what to do with this book. I feel like maybe it's time to talk about Holly. Holly Short, our protagonist.
And she's a good, like, there are good cops. And we want to, like, be clear about that on this episode. Like, so she is a fairy cop. But
yes,
that's the right thing. There's all sorts of, like, fairy cop technology.
Yes. This is a very tech-heavy book in general.
It is in a way that, like, I found to be a little, and I am stupid. Keep this in mind, everyone listening. This is a little too much for me. It's a little bit thick.
Yes.
Like, and then the visor does this to the shield, which then penetrates the time loop and da 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 da. And there, it gets hung up on the technicals in a way that, like, it really felt like something that was for the boys more than anything. And I don't know if I'm for the boys. I mean, probably not given my career, but. but this was something where it's like, that part of it wasn't appealing to me, because it's basically this underground world of, like, there's centaurs and there's, I know it came out in 2001, but it's what I've heard called the Monsters Inc-ification of fantasy, which is this notion of, like, you know, this lore you're familiar with, like monsters in your closet and they pop out. Turns out they're at work and there's structures and bureaucracy, and blah, 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 blah. And the same thing with leprechauns, with centaurs, with goblins and dwarfs. Turns out they're all part of this, like, a social ecosystem that's, like, in the core of the earth or whatever the case may be. And I think at this point, I do. The new Cat in the Hat movie is also, like, turns out the Cat in the Hat is at work. It's not out yet, the Bill Hader.
Okay. I was like, Mike Myers? Wow. Wow. No,
but it's one of those where it's like, turns out the Cat in the Hat's at work and that's his job.
That's so sad for some reason to me that it's work.
Yeah. Like, it all just because I think the whole idea, maybe in this, like, even broader sense, the Joss Whedonification of fantasy. Which is like, we're doing
say
it,
more,
but we're also kind of apologizing for it at the same time. But like, like mixing the mundane with the magic, this idea of Buffy would be in these, like, fist fights with vampires of, like, and then make little quips and be,
yeah,
like, oh no, I'm gonna miss my midterms and,
exactly.
and things like that, or like, or just that specific sort of, like, winky, and then that bleeds into like the Avengers and then the Marvel, the MCUification of like what comedy is and like action movies.
Yeah.
And, like, kind of smirking and like, this guy's crazy, or like, don't even say it. I don't think so. Like, I am not articulating this well, but it's this idea of like, don't take the fantasy seriously. Don't take the world and the given circumstances of the story seriously. Instead, everyone's going to be Iron Man and be like, okay, you know, when the villain's like, I will conquer the world. He's like, oh, that's a bit much, buddy. You
right.
want to do a little rewrite on that. And that sort of thing of like, it deflates the grandeur right. of these like tropes that we've become familiar with. I guess Artemis Fowl is doing that in some ways.
Yeah.
With what we've come to think of as like these fantasy figures and mythical creatures.
It does feel so Joss Whedon, and I'm a huge Buffy fan. Like, that was very central to me. But I liked how you phrased it of the humor is almost apologizing for the genre. Because I do think, like, in hindsight, growing up in the aughts, like, comedy was mean. Like, your friends interacted with you by being mean. And so I think this fits with it. And also, I'm reminded of, you know, like 2 weeks ago, it was Halloween, and I was watching It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, and Linus is, you know, waiting for the Great Pumpkin, and he goes, nothing but sincerity for as far as the eye can see. And I feel like sincerity was so out of style in the time in which this was published. And you also said combining the magical with the mundane, which can be so successful sometimes. I'm thinking about a series about a boy called Charlie Bone that is like the same era. It's very, very Harry Potter. And the thing that works about that is it is so sincere and it is so heartfelt. Yeah, there's so much. That's a very meaty thing to think about.
Yeah, in the same way, I think about this with the genre of musicals that exists in the 21st century, mm-hmm. where so many of them are saying in some fashion, not all of them, but are saying in some fashion, oh, don't worry, we know like no one sings in real life and this is kind of a little too much for you to take. So we're gonna have people kind of mumble. We're not gonna do that much choreography. We're gonna like reel it up and sort of commit to this veneer of authenticity so you can kind of like stay in the zone.
Yeah.
And you can like take this seriously. So don't worry. For La La Land, we didn't like hire singers. We hired like Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. Like they're not really dancers and they're kind of real. They're real people. And that's kind of the point. And blah, blah, blah. And there's so many where through the middle of it, it's like they're almost apologizing. You know, I felt wicked to be like this.
In a lot of ways,
unfortunately.
Oh, no.
A show I have a lot of time for, but a movie I don't really. It's like, let's get through it and not really have a particular idea behind each song, although that's not quite exactly what I'm thinking about, but it's like it's a minor version of it. There's just something that happens where people are so scared of genre and taking something seriously. Everything needs to be a subversion of the thing and needs to not be, oh, so straight across the plate. I've been watching, I'm going to be a little evangelical about this.
Go for it.
I started watching this new show, Aaron, called Pluribus.
Yes. I haven't seen it, but yes, it's out there.
I recommend you and the listeners Google not a word or a whisper of this show and just watch it. Mm-hmm. And that is something that is so unapologetically genre and funny and authentic and sincere all at the same time. Obviously, high bar to clear and skill level with Vince Gilligan and everyone in that crew. But he's someone that came from X-Files, which was a show that was hard sci-fi that was also very funny a lot of times with writers like Darren Morgan on the show and people like Gilligan. And there is a way to do it that I think like we're still kind of like recalibrating from. I think there is this cultural acknowledgement of like we got a little too Whedon-y, huh? Like and you know, not like he's part of culture anymore with Whedon, but like the Taika Waititi thing where everyone's like, yeah, Thor Ragnarok. And now everyone's like, this is actually a little much. And it still exists in like the Deadpool stuff. The Deadpool stuff feels like a very direct
thing
to this of like making jokes about you can't do cocaine in a Disney movie. Boo, boo, bee, boo. Like that's like we're rediscovering sincerity again.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of another property. I hear Percy Jackson, The Lightning Thief, which I think is canceled now.
but on Disney Plus, might be,
It might be. I forget. I hear that that's fairly sincere as a property. Which is different from being humorless, you know?
Yes.
Those are distinct things. You don't have to be sincere and humorless. People think that's like a all or nothing proposition.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm reading another book for this podcast, which is Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging from 1999. Okay. And there is so much in that book about the fear of being cringeworthy. And that feels so current here 26 years later. And I don't know, there's something I'm really sad about in terms of the fear of being perceived in any way even a little vulnerable. And I don't know that there's been
the price you pay for doing anything. It's like that's
anything.
The toll you pay at the toll booth for accomplishing anything at all. It was like, this is mildly to majorly embarrassing.
Yeah.
And it is not embarrassing to not have done anything. I mean, it's embarrassing in a different way. That said, this thing that we're talking about, like this style, it's inherent in like a lot of the setup of it and just like the don't worry, we're like, it's not just fairy stuff, it's cop stuff too.
Yes.
Like it is kind of true to that, like there's hostages, there's a negotiator, there's like the tropes of a Die Hard like movie. And in that way, it is playing it straight in a way that's not apologetic, but it is just kind of this.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Notion of like, we know this isn't interesting enough, so we're putting a thing on top of another thing. And I wish I could say I was more compelled. I mean, fantasy generally for me, I don't know how you feel about it. I'm sure you've talked about it in other episodes, but fantasy generally for me is not something like I gravitate towards, like for its own sake, inherently on its own terms, blah, blah, blah. It's something that I like when I like it.
Yeah.
Done well when it's whatever, as far as, you know, like obviously Lord of the Rings, best movie trilogy of all time, things like that. But
indeed,
not anything where it's like, I'm so immersed in it, I need it to be upended in a way that like, maybe I am so immersed in like this idea of the rom-com or this idea of like the family drama that I would like to see an upending of it. But it just doesn't exist for me in fantasy. And maybe like, obviously, because we're talking about a book geared towards children, that maybe the idea is like, this is teaching them like different subgenres or parody or whatever, where it's like, I guess kids don't have like a lot of cop shows in the children's library at the elementary school.
Maybe. So
this is kind of the closest thing that they have to it. Perhaps that is part of the idea.
I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, I think like I'm thinking a lot about, obviously in kids' books, there's normally like a moral, a lesson, whatever. And I think even in adult literature, it can end with proposing an idea without necessarily saying this is the moral we need to teach. I don't know what I am supposed to walk away from this book with or thinking.
Oh, you mean just like nuggets and takeaways?
Yeah.
What would be in the study guide for this?
Yeah. What's the, you know, capital T theme? I don't know.
I mean, the arc seems to be more obviously with like Holly and the squad, Artemis, and his thing is like, oh, like this kid's a supervillain, but he does like his mom.
Yeah.
He does like his mom.
He does have a little bit of tragedy. Yeah.
I'll remember that. And he saves her, et cetera, et cetera. But otherwise, no, like there was no compelling. We start here, we go here. The most interesting part of it to me was the structure of it being essentially a, you know, what they would call in television a bottle episode.
Where it's taking
place in one setting was kind of compelling for me because I don't know if I'd ever read a kid's book that was like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I struggled to, I mean, it was a pretty breezy read. Even, yeah. Again, for me, a doy doy. I'm like, we were going to record this a couple weeks ago, and I was like halfway through. And so I've been sitting with this book for like maybe a month or so.
Oh,
like,
no.
Oh, no, it's fine. I finished it last night, so it's nice and fresh. But yeah, I wasn't like, wow, those characters are so vivid, I guess. I also, you know, I believe the cop, the chief, Julius.
Yes.
Dame Judi Dench in the film.
Yes, they made him a lady. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have absolutely no interest in seeing the film. And I think a character has to change by the end of it. I don't know if Artemis or Holly really change that much. They sort of like come to a kind of agreement for 5 seconds. But I think the thing about like a character like Artemis Fowl, there is a degree of wish fulfillment of a child reading this and feeling like you know nothing, feeling like you have no control, no authority, no ability to enact change in this world. So you have a character who knows everything, who has all the power, who like doesn't really have parents and gets to boss around this old guy or this adult. But then if you come from a place of knowing everything, unless you get fully humbled, like you were saying, where do you go? Like you sort of are already finished at the beginning.
I know, like I'm thinking of A Few Good Men right now.
Okay.
When that movie came out, based on a play, theater, which Colfer loves, evidently.
Colfer loves.
He loves theater. He has a lot of thoughts about Jason Robert Brown's, you know, adaptation of Bridges of Madison County. Aaron, I got to tell you something.
Yes.
This is a digression. I have a car where when I got it, it had a 3-month trial of Sirius XM where there's all these different stations that you can flip around to. And I'm trying to be a little bit less on my phone. So I was like, you know what? If I can get a good deal on the subscription, I'm going to keep paying for satellite radio. So like I can go out without my phone and
yeah,
to listen to all the time. There is a channel on Sirius XM called On Broadway. It's in the 60s, maybe 67 or 69 or something like that. But I will tune in to On Broadway. And, you know, it's a lot of stuff we know. It's a lot of, like, stuff from movie musicals. It's Sondheim. They'll play Lin-Manuel Miranda stuff. And then sometimes it'll be like, yo, what's this? A Pretty Woman musical? That's really bad?
Yeah.
There will be uncut gems just playing on this radio station all the dang time. I am rediscovering the act of music discovery through the On Broadway channel on Sirius XM. And anyway, Jason Robert Brown's Bridges of Madison County was.
Have you ever heard something on there and go, oh, I have to listen to the whole musical?
Oh,
or is
yeah,
it? Yeah,
definitely.
Nice.
Oh, sure. Because I think compared to friends of mine, I'm like, yeah, I like Broadway. But compared to like the like history of American musical theater. And then, like, what I'm starting to get on my FYP as far as, like, okay, here's what you need to know about King Kong and the huge puppet they made for it. I'm like, oh, I don't know anything. I know less than nothing. It's like saying I love Madonna because I like a prayer and
right,
literally nothing else. So, yeah, there's tons of stuff. Like, a funny thing happened on the way to the forum. Like, tons of stuff from the 50s and 60s where I'm like, I'm simply not that familiar with this stuff.
Ooh. Has it ever played any 1776 for you?
Oh, you know what? I think it did, but I'm also remembering back to the brief moment I majored in theater at University of Texas in Austin, and we did a musical theater review show where I did one of the songs from 1776. And just as Tom here is written, we
say oh, yeah.
The eagle inside belongs to us, or however that goes.
Yeah, yeah, the egg.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the egg, yeah.
I have seen that musical too many times.
776 times, perhaps?
At least 40.
Okay.
And I've seen it live, I think, 3 times. I like when people know it. I like when people know
it. I know it. I saw Mr. Feeney in the film adaptation of it when I was a child.
Yes.
I think of A Few Good Men, and I think about a movie, a review that the late, great Roger Ebert did at the Chicago Sun-Times. Someone that, like, from ages 11 to 14, I could tell you, like, all the movies that came out during that time. Here's what Roger thought about that one. And with A Few Good Men, he gave it 2 out of 4 stars. You know, this is Nicholson, Cruz, Moore, Kevin Pollak, Kevin Bacon. Some of our best Kevins we have. And his... I think this is a 5 out of 5 movie, of course, and has only aged spectacularly over time. But his complaint with it is, I didn't care for this movie because so much of the movie is saying, here's the plan, and then executing what the plan is. We're going to get Colonel Jessup to do this in court. And then they get Colonel Jessup to do that in court. The thing that maybe him and I differ on, and maybe he would have revised this opinion at some point later, or maybe he did, is the idea of, like, that is very pleasurable to watch, in the same way that you don't complain, oh, in a heist movie, they say what the heist is going to be, and right. then it happens. And that was kind of boring. I will say, though, I would levy some of the same complaint about A Few Good Men to Artemis Fowl. Mm-hmm. This notion of, like, this Artemis kid, he's a few steps ahead of the goblins. And then it's like, how does the book go? There's a few setbacks, but he's basically a few steps ahead of the goblins.
And yeah. There's this odd kind of narrator. It's not in first person. It's not like there's a specific person talking, but there are multiple times where it'll be like, Artemis had never thought of this before. And you think there's going to be like some kind of, oh no, some kind of danger. And then it's like, no, he figured it out. Like mm-hmm. the next page, it worked out just fine. The whole time, the fairies are setting it up as there's no way he can get away with it. And yet, you know, he will. It just...
Well, and this yeah. is also the detriment of reading the first in an 11-book series of, like, I think he'll be okay. I don't think it's the ghost of Artemis in 10
No.
books. So there's a little bit of nerfing that happens with that. So when all the stakes are so action-y and not emotional,
yeah,
it's hard, it's difficult for me to get into it in the same way that perhaps I would with another property.
Yeah. The next one, I think, is something like Artemis Fowl in the Ice Cave.
I bet he's a low layer or high up, and perhaps, you know, people try to get him, but he's always a few steps ahead. The young Sheldonification of protagonists.
Yeah, he's a little so-and-so.
Yeah, and there's just no, like, life to, like, oh, his dynamic with this person is fun. His dynamic with this person is fun. You get way more of the dynamics with all the little fairy cops.
Yes.
As far as, like, the centaur's a little stinker and Julius is too, blah, blah, blah. And then Ollie Short is basically that hot rabbit from Zootopia.
Exactly. Exactly.
I said rabbit. I didn't need to say hot rabbit.
That, but I feel like, not myself, a lot of people have opinions about the hotness of the characters in that film. They put something in the juice there.
Yeah, 100%. No, that's not really my fault when you think about it.
If everyone has the same reaction, it's no individuals. Maybe they did something.
I think so. Is this often with a lot of books you find where it's just like, man, this one.
No.
Really? So this is a sort of aberrant experience.
It's, well, and that's the thing. There are plenty of times where I have come into the recording being like, I didn't like this book. And then talking to the other person, I find things that are, even if it's not the whole thing is redeemed, but thinking like, oh, this is a really great, you know, part of a young person's journey with reading, or this one narrative is really powerful. And I think maybe because I don't think you read this as a kid, right? No. Were you
I
even
got to read until a few years ago? So.
Oh wow!
I know, it's this is huge for me to even be able to do this.
But I think maybe because neither of us had a history with it, that's part of it. I mean, I think I probably picked it up. I know I owned it. Yes. I think I probably picked it up at like a Scholastic book fair, and on all the pages, it has this little pictogram code at the bottom of all the pages.
Oh, interesting. That wasn't, I read it on Kindle.
Yeah.
My daddy Jeff.
I was wondering, yeah, if it would be on.
That was not on mine.
And I remember so clearly when I was a kid, like opening it, seeing this code on the page, looking for like a key somewhere, didn't find one. And I was like, well, I'm not going to do that. You're going to keep secrets from me? No. You did.
That's awesome.
Which is why I sort of like wanted to one day eventually read it and see what it all was about. And it's about...
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Yeah, cops. The LEP recon unit.
Love yeah, and you know, cop narratives, like all of our little progressive aside, like cop narratives just generally is, again, like fantasy. If it's great, it's great. I'll watch it. I'll watch Heat, whatever. I love Heat. But it's not something where it's like, this is my bread and butter. So you're putting things that are not my natural proclivity on top of each other.
But I feel like those audiences of cop stuff and fantasy probably don't overlap a ton.
No, so it's not like dumb that he would think this is kind of novel. I don't think it's a bad choice. I'm just speaking more about like individual appeal.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, I think it's like a nice little literary, like, I again, remembering the intended audience, like,
yes,
maybe it is something that like children learn, like, these are the tropes of the genre, these are the cliches, these are like sort of the narrative pillars of what this kind of story is.
Yeah,
but listen, I'd rather watch Heat. Now put Al Pacino in Artemis Fowl.
Ooh, in which role? All of them?
Oh, I would just have him be Julius.
Judy Dench. Yeah.
Yeah, I would have Al Pacino be Judy Dench.
You wouldn't want to see him as Artemis?
Well, I would want to see just any adult as Artemis. Not a child. I'm anti-child or something, but like, I don't care for little smart kids.
Yeah.
Because I was such a dumb kid. Representation matters.
Representation matters. Yeah, I think it's he seems fully formed, and I would be much more interested in how he got here than...
Like, is he a weirdo that doesn't have any friends because he's so freaking smart? And then like he develops a camaraderie with Holly where it's like, oh, wait, is this what being friends is like?
Yeah.
Oh, shoot, but we're enemies. That's something.
Yeah.
I'm just boop-boopy-dooping on your podcast. Like, that's a little bit of a thread there.
The setup for his character, his dad is dead, and there's no family fortune, and he needs to repair the family's reputation. All of that is kind of interesting to me. And it, after, like, page 5, it does not matter.
No, certainly not.
Yeah.
And maybe that's, like, the groundwork for... Well, we'll get to it in the next scene.
Yeah.
But again, little did they know a 36-year-old man was going to be reading this in 2025, and he was going to have notes. He was going to have a few notes.
Maybe we can get to Owen before it hits the West End, just to make sure it all goes well.
Oh, and hopefully it's half as good as Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, a play that's really good that everyone really likes. For real reason.
You know, I'm not sure if this will have musical numbers in it, but God, I hope it does.
Yeah, a little something. My name is Mulch Duggins. I like to fart up the dirt. I am a Mulch Duggins.
Yeah.
I'm a big flirt.
I realize we haven't exactly clarified. Mulch Duggins is a dwarf who's a criminal, and they say, we need you to crawl up into this house, and he says, okay, I'm a dwarf. Here's how dwarfs do it. We eat the dirt. And then we shit and fart it out.
And it's like violent. Like people have to suck it or they die.
Like nothing can take down this manservant except for Mulch Duggins' farts.
Say that.
The end.
Yeah. If you're not compelled by like the mechanics of how that works, unfortunately, there's a good like 6 paragraphs all about this stuff.
It's a very technical book. Yeah.
That's what I was kind of surprised by. Is like, is this just like a style? I'm not... The other book I'm reading at the same time, or I was reading at the same time as this, that's fiction, is Vineland, the Thomas Pynchon book. And I'm like, that's kind of technical in some
ways,
but it's a lot more emotional. But I am just like, we didn't really talk about this last time, Aaron, but like, I'm kind of a book dummy for real. I know I was making a little joke and being silly when I said I just learned how to read a couple years ago, but I truly struggle with my daily, then weekly, then monthly, and annual reading habits in a way that's disappointing to me when I look back on the year. And it's like, I read 2.5 nonfiction books that like most of the people I admire and esteem would have knocked out in like 10 days. And it takes me a lot longer of a time. And I struggle with fiction in a way that I simply don't with film and then often television, where I'm like, yeah, I can like crush tape like a son of a gun within a week. And then with book stuff, I'm like, okay, who's the guy in Vineland when I last picked this up 4 weeks ago? And what's their deal? Okay, there's a Cliff Notes on Reddit I can kind of read for to summarize what I just saw, because Pynchon is so like digressive and tangential in his own way, and I don't know if it's ever going to get better in my adult life. I hope it does, because I want to read more, but I feel myself in an impasse now that I'm like over the hill at 36 and I'm on the last half of my life.
I feel like maybe you're reading the wrong books. I think that might be it. That's what I would say. And if you struggle with fiction, don't bother with it. Or, you know, at least.
But what about the great works, Aaron? What about, you know, Baldwin? What about Cormac? What about Larry McMurtry?
Well, here's something that I do. Because I have a ton of books. I sort them by page length. So I start with the shortest ones first. And you can get some turnover there. And I think that can also help build the skill a little bit to sort of settle in.
I need like an adult reading course. I feel remedial. And it's so funny because so much of our like contemporary life is just reading stuff every day in terms of like comments and emails and, you know, like long reads. And I have 19 tabs open all the time on my computer. But for some reason, which like Artemis Fowl, it's like, I'm breezing through this thing.
Yeah, finally. Satisfying. Yeah. Have you read Gatsby?
No, I've not.
I think that's Gatsby. A good place to start. A classic, very well done, very accessible, very short. And we have an episode about it from, last year? I don't know.
Who is the guest on that?
My friend Alex Brunkhorst, who is an author and realtor that I met through my boyfriend.
That novel seems to be a lot about property.
It is. And she, I think, has written two novels, and one of them I started listening to on audiobook. And you can like see there's some influence, which is always really cool when you can trace that back. I wonder how many, it's such a mean thing to say, but you can tell reading this with the degree of technicality that Colfer was having a fun time. That doesn't necessarily translate to the reader's experience.
It's interesting. Like, you know, it's this notion of world building that's like, what's the line where it's indulgent versus not?
Yeah.
Truly, the only series of books I ripped through, this is like saying I watched Seinfeld or I listened to the Beatles, but the only series of books I ripped through was Harry Potter when I read them in college, and I would read like one a week, which for me was huge, Aaron. And my memory of the world building in those books was, it was like, the dialogue's okay. It's pretty functional without being severely cliche. But, you know, the world building felt economical and pretty decent as far as like, oh, I'm getting a good picture and understanding of it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why that franchise lives on, I think, not because the characters are compelling, but because it lends itself so well to making theme parks and merchandising and turning it all into tangible products rather than interacting with those characters. You know, you don't have a Samwise in there that really sticks in your heart. Who, by the way, current president of SAG. Thank you, Sean Astin. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about this little book that we have not covered?
Oh gosh, I wanted something to cling on to.
Yes.
And sometimes I will do the thing where it's like, I kind of zone out while I'm reading something and then I'll reread it for due diligence. But there was so much of it that was fairly inessential in this fairly short book as far as like, and then the ray guns do this as Holly's floating up here. And it was just like, it felt like automobile manuals, you know?
Yes. So yes.
I decided it was not important for me to understand.
No, I felt like so much of it was about, so much like page space was spent on like the process of getting from the molten core of the earth to the crust and these really minor fairy cops who never came back.
And I do wonder, because I don't know nothing about nothing, but I wonder if it's like, you can do that once. You can show this process, and then like maybe it is like efficient enough that it gives everyone like a taste. And
yeah.
But then when you keep doing it, where it's like, and by the way, the goggles do this and da da da. And I'm making it sound more laborious than it actually was, but that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
While reading it, and I wish there was a different way, a better way for it, Aaron.
I agree. It just doesn't grab you. But 10-year-old boys, sound off in the comments. It's weird.
Off. How many, do you have any child listeners?
For it's real? Weird that they're here if they are. I really don't know. it'd be weird. well, I would not consider it required reading. What about you?
Not for me.
No, not personally. No. Well, that's all I've got.
I think more podcasts should end with the hook thing. That's all.
That's all I got.
No, just be honest. Don't do like a wrap up. Just say whatever, guys.
And that's the kind of episode. That's the kind of book.
Oh, gracious.
Anything you'd like to plug? Where can people find you?
People find me at Kevin T. Porter everywhere. And listen. Good Christian Fun. Patreon.com/Good Christian Fun. We did an episode with Aaron a couple of
months
ago.
I was there.
Who was a damn delightful guest. Oh, she was so funny talking about Veggie Tales and Queen Esther. We
Hank have Queen.
Incorporated Hank Queen into the show every week ever since.
Really?
That is true.
Oh, what an honor.
It lives in the theme song. So.
Wow. I was absolutely tickled pink.
Oh, it was great. A great time. And Aaron's a Christian now, which is awesome.
Yeah, we talked a lot about all my Christian reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And anyone who comes on the show becomes a Christian. And listeners, good news. Anyone who listens to the show becomes a Christian too. So
surprise.
If you were worried about, going where, don't worry.
Kevin was pointing downwards. Christian. Thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. What a blast. Even talking about mediocre content. Happy to talk with my buddy Aaron.
Thank you. Well, that's all I got. I'm gonna turn off the recording. That's all I got. That's all she wrote.
Bye, Queen.
Bye, Queen.